ATL Echo presents
a collection of one-sentence stories by The Forbidden Forest. Feet sure, heart racing, skin prickling. He steps up to the plinth. Harry's walked through the veil once before, for Sirius, and it hadn't worked. Had left him twice as broken the day Sirius went through. But he'll make it work. For Draco. Against all odds, it's Potter who keeps bringing him something edible each day, slipping in under the cover of darkness and his cloak. It's Potter arguing his case, so loud it rings all the way down the long, echoing, empty halls to where the holding cells sit, tucked away in time and space, cold and lonely and endless. And it's Potter, finally, and his magic, wrenching the door open wordlessly, wandlessly, saying, "We did it. You're free. Come on, come with me," as he holds out his hand, palm open and warm. Pale smoke, strange, unnatural, billows out from the regal arches of Gringotts. Harry is pelting towards it, feet hitting the ground hard as he pushes violently against the relentless tide of wizards, witches, goblins, fleeing its looming shadow. And as a terrible rumble starts to shake the cobblestones in their damp beds, marble pillars collapsing in concertina, Harry screams a name he's never spoken aloud.
Draco!
One moment, it's an average Tuesday morning in the office, and Ron is bounding in to gleefully tell him, "Hey, have you heard? Malfoy's pregnant, can you imagine?" And the next moment, Harry's standing in the pouring rain on a doorstep in Islington, desperately needing to know, "Is it mine?" Harry, 21, knows himself. Knows he isn't into men. Knows he's going to marry Ginny. Knows he's going to be an Auror. Harry, 28, thinks, "Wow, what a fucking idiot." Easy, natural, where he belongs. It's just like riding a broom, Harry thinks with a familiar rush, sinking down on Draco for the first time. Harry should be looking for a glint of gold, but as the stiff November breeze stings his face, whipping up his hair and scarlet robes, his eyes fix instead on the flash of white circling the pitch below. Harry faces death before he's old enough to properly remember it. And he faces it again. Age 11, alone. Age 12, alone, venom seeping through his veins. Age 13, alone, cold, breathless, dementors closing in, his father's best friend, serious, unconscious on the ground. Age 14, in a graveyard, high, cold laughter ringing through the headstones, his classmate, dead, still warm in his arms. Age 15, on cold ministry tiles, grief, serious, ripping like gunfire through him. Age 16, again, 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 every second for most of age 17, and he's fucking tired. So when the Department of Mysteries wants him to face it, again.
Harry, can I call you Harry? You could help us, together. Imagine, Harry. We could access new facets and depths to life magic that have never before been studied, Harry.
He says no, and keeps saying no, until they offer him a chance he can't resist, a choice that is not a choice. Sirius. Percy Weasley loosens his tie, tucks a lone box of possessions under his arm, and resigns, effective immediately, from the Ministry of Magic on May 10, 1998. 15 minutes later, the bell jingles above the door to Weasley's Wizard Wheezes as he pushes past the closed sign, shoes crunching on broken glass, and calls out softly, "George, I've come to help." In the first spring of the new millennium, Ron, newly graduated trainee Auror, had been having a good year so far. But he should have known his new Auror partner, Draco Fuckface Malfoy, would be the one to fucking ruin it. He just hadn't expected the fucking to be literal.
Gross.
Or to be on his desk.
Super gross.
Or for it to involve his best mate.
Super, super gross.
With his fucking trousers down around his ankles and his bloody bare arse in the air, for innocent bystanders to walk in on. Hermione, why are you fucking laughing? This isn't funny, and if you have even a shred of love for me, you'll obliviate me permanently. It happened on another late Thursday night at the office, the two of them bent low over the desk, doggedly following up case notes as they worked against the clock. Malfoy stood up, stretching, and suddenly Harry found himself transfixed by the arch of his back, the tight line of Malfoy's thighs, and his mind went blank aside from a single word. Fuck. Draco was doing his essay in the library, or he would be, if stupid Potter and his stupid loser friends weren't being so obnoxious, sitting there, in his line of sight, whispering to each other, Potter's glasses glinting in the light from the lanterns floating throughout the towering shelves, his windswept embarrassment of a haircut, if it could be called that, going every which way, thick and annoying. God, Draco would like to grab it and just yank! And his stupid shirt sleeves pushed messily up his arms. He was so fucking... And then Potter looked up. Bottle green eyes boring straight into Draco's, and the quill in Draco's hand snapped. Harry poured hot water into two mugs, just in time for Draco, bare thighs and, oh God, wearing Harry's Quidditch shirt, okay, to pad down the stairs from the eighth-year bedrooms. Ron, looking up from the sofa, moaned in great agony,
Merlin's tits, Harry, you didn't.
It takes them months of hard work, and even harder patience, which is a fuse Malfoy has burnt through in seconds any time he's opened his mouth around Harry since age 11, so a miracle. But they do it. They actually do it. And finally, the transformation happens. Suddenly, it's not two young men standing ankle-deep in snow in Scotland, but instead, in the blink of an eye, two birds of prey, one dark, one almost invisible against the winter landscape, shooting instinctively into the air to circle one another. In the days after, a cough began to rack Harry's body, relentless, exhausting. Fiend fire smoke was pretty fucking toxic, it turned out, and Madame Pomfrey had rounded them all up like ducklings and marched them off to the hospital wing, which finally had beds free now that most of the wounded had been transferred to St. Mungo's, and tucked all of them in tightly, casting diagnostic charms, administering delicate healing tinctures, and coaxing medicinal potions into them that felt like a punch to the throat. Each time, Harry turned his head to the side and watched Malfoy swallow, half sitting up in the bed beside his. It's pitch black, deep winter, a needlepoint of stars the only light visible in the sky above, and Draco is shaking, from terror, from exhaustion, from desperation, from a cold that isn't natural, straining to hear the rustle of movement in the trees. Something is here. Something is here. Why can't he fucking apparate? He draws deep and deeper still, trying to find something, anything, happy, strong, good enough, voice cracking as he whispers, Expecto Patronum. Expecto Patronum. And if Potter can fucking do it, he can, Draco thinks wildly. Fucking Potter and his stupid scar and his stupid hair and that warm, easy grin that had flashed at him for a brief, endless moment last week across the department floor. Green eyes, catching and holding Draco's own. And suddenly, a dazzling white shape bounds from his wand, banishing the encroaching shadow and circling him protectively as it tosses its antlered head. Red flags start flying the moment Robards and half a dozen department heads meet them on the front steps of the Ministry Academy for their first day. A suspiciously warm and public welcome for a bunch of new Aura recruits. And, yep, sure enough, there are the reporters, like vultures waiting for their favorite carcass, and Harry is forced to shake hands with each and every official, camera bulbs bursting bright and violent in his face as his stomach sinks and his hackles rise. By the end of the day, he's exhausted, and by the following evening, he's ready to explode. By day three, he's had enough. He walks out mid-class and doesn't look back. ETL Echo, echoing tales for everyone to love.